Graduation is a sweet occasion, but finding the perfect gift can be a bitter struggle. MMS.com has a solution. Personalized M&Ms. Just imagine the look on your grad's face when they receive a custom candy creation featuring their school's colors, name, and even their photo printed right on some M&Ms. It's a thoughtful way to celebrate their accomplishments and make the occasion even more special. Visit MMS.com to create your own personalized gifts and party favors for graduations, weddings, birthdays, and more. That's MMS.com. Use code WONDERY to receive 15% off your next order.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code WONDERY for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery, code WONDERY.
Welcome to the ID10T podcast. This is episode 934. I would like to very quickly say that I'm performing in Oxnard this weekend at Levity Live with a Mike Furman and also an April Richardson. So go to levitylive.com to get tickets. Those will be Friday and Saturday. That's the 23rd and 24th of February. Katie, do you have anything on the community corkboard, which people can send corkboard at id10t.com?
Yeah, I got a couple cool things to that email.
What? Fantastic.
Ken Border writes, I am currently a writer and the content manager for a geektastic website called mammothgamers.com, and I would love for your listeners to check us out. We are an all-volunteer writers who just love to write about the things that make us happy. In this case, it's video games, comic books, and all the geek your heart can handle. So again, that's mammothgamers.com. And then Tony Price writes, my wife, a teacher, and I, a web designer, started a thing aimed at our plant-based and vegan communities called Grizzly Goods. So far, we have some cool shirts, pins, and stickers for our fellow animal lovers, as well as my wife's unique origami mixed media artwork. Shirts come in youth and adult sizes. We're just starting out, so it's still part-time, but we're hoping that some folks out there might be interested in what we have. So you can head over to grizzlygoods.com, and they're also on Twitter and Instagram at grizzlygoodsltd.
Fantastic. This episode is Jesse Plemons, who I had the pleasure of meeting, I don't know, maybe like three months ago. I went to SNL for the first time, like to watch a whole SNL, and he was there, and we recognized each other and said hi and then hung out, and he was fucking awesome. So he came into the podcast, and he's great. And the movie he's in right now is Game Night. He's great in everything, but Game Night, which is Jason Bateman is in it, Rachel McAdams is in it, and also Jesse Plemons, a bunch of people in it. The movie is fantastic, and it's in theaters February 23rd. February 23rd, that is from the posting of this episode, tomorrow. So go see it. Go to a theater. Have an IRL experience with a movie instead of just watching stuff in your home. Take the time. Go park. Be a community. I say these things because I'm trying to learn to do that more too, Katie.
It's important.
It's important so to get alluring off your phone and stay home.
And
go outside, get in the elements. Yeah. I know it's cold in a lot of places.
Well, here it's more like my holdup is I don't want to sit in traffic. And a lot of times I'm like, I don't want to drive there.
I get it. Park and get
out. But then you'd get there and you're like, oh, this was worth it.
Yeah, it's worth it. It's worth it once you go. So please, please, please go see Game Night. Jesse's great in it. This episode is brought to you by LinkedIn. A business is only as strong as its people. Every hire matters when you're doing a business. Trust me. So don't settle for posting and hoping the right person is going to find your role and apply. You post to job boards and you hope you're going to find the right person for your job, but how often do you actually check job boards? For most people, it's a very occasional thing. But with LinkedIn, people go there daily to grow professionally, explore job opportunities. 70% of the United States workforce is on LinkedIn. Obviously you've heard of LinkedIn. I would assume you've heard of it. You can ask any of the hundreds of thousands of businesses who have posted LinkedIn jobs over the past year how they have had their experiences with it. And because LinkedIn considers skills, location, experiences, and more, they're going to match and promote your job to deliver the best candidates imaginable. Businesses rate LinkedIn jobs 40% higher than job boards at delivering quality candidates. 22 million professionals view and apply to jobs at LinkedIn every week in every industry. Industries like yours, industries like mine and Katie's. If you're not using LinkedIn, you are missing out. Go to linkedin.com/ID10T and get a $50 credit toward your first job post. That's linkedin.com/ID10T. That's ID in the number 10 and T for $50 credit today. Terms and conditions apply. This episode also brought to you by Masterclass, which I am so excited about Masterclass for various reasons. So Matt, if you haven't seen it, basically you can learn just about anything from masters in that field. And these are masters that you have heard of too. So I'm talking about like cooking from Gordon Ramsay or photography from Annie Leibovitz or basketball from Steph Curry. That is what Masterclass is. I am excited for the Steve Martin one. Martin one. I'm going to watch that. He does one on comedy. They're all online classes taught by the best people in the world, people that you would want to learn from. Each class is shot with cinematic production quality and offers on-demand lessons loaded with exclusive content that you will only find on Masterclass. There's over 30 masters. There's cooking, screenwriting, filmmaking from Scorsese.
Oh my God.
What else do you, you would pay thousands of dollars to go watch that if someone said, hey, you want to go see Martin Scorsese talk about directing? Yes, I do. So with the new All Access Pass, you can unlock every class from over 30 masters, all for the price of two. ID10T listeners can get the All Access Pass at masterclass.com/ID10T. Learn from the best in the world at masterclass.com/ID10T. And now here's the ID10T podcast number 934 with Jesse Plemons. Katie, it's your time to shine, kid.
Initiating ID10T protocol.
Been to this house that was like, I forget what it's called. It's in Glendale. It's this huge mansion that was built for an Italian silent film actor.
No, where? What is it?
I'll have to get the name of it, but it's incredible. I went to some party up there. But
there's some nice houses in like the hills of Glendale. Really old snazzy houses up there.
Yeah, there's like weird. Huge taxidermy in there. Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, my wife and I have the same weird taste, and I did not marry someone who was like, you got to get all your dumb shit out of here. Like, she had the same amount of dumb shit. Okay. Like, that's a prop from 28 Days Later, and that's hers.
Whoa.
So.
That's cool.
I feel like we should move that out of here because we've been doing podcasts in here for a while because I'm renovating another house where the podcast studio is going to be. And someone saw the other taxidermy and they're like, is that a real chimp head? And we're like, no.
Come on.
What the fuck are you talking about? Like, we just have a chimp head with its exposed brain in the dining room. Yeah, don't worry about it. I'm always kind of worried if people see the taxidermy and they're like, what the fuck are you guys into? Yeah. It's just, we just like old weird things. What part of town are you in?
We're in Toluca Lake.
Oh, that's great. So, yeah, that's great. It's a great part.
It would have been very close, but we just came from like the Yahoo Facebook complex over and like, it was very far away.
Is it driving Santa Monica or Beverly Hills?
Past all like Playa Vista.
Oh, Playa Vista. Oh, they're out there where the YouTube space is?
I guess, yeah.
Yeah, that's all. That's out by LMU.
New Silicon Valley up there.
It is. Yeah, YouTube built their studio out there because I think it was a bunch of people who didn't really, it was Northern California people who were like, oh, Playa Vista. I mean, it's only like 10 miles. But... it's getting there is sort of like that last scene in Shawshank where he's like crawling through the sewage. There's just no easy way to get there. So it's like an hour 15, no matter how you look at it.
Yeah.
We watched Game Night last night. It was fucking great.
You dug it?
Yes.
Cool.
You're great in it.
Thanks, man.
That was so much fun.
Thank you.
We've already started recording, by the way.
Okay.
So it's a soft entry into this thing. But I was actually gonna I'm glad you're doing this, because when we hung out in New York a couple months ago, I'm like, oh, Jesse would be really great on the podcast. And then your name came up.
Well, perfect, yeah.
Well, I'm glad. Thanks for doing it.
Yeah, man.
We never got you on Talking Bad. We never got to talk Breaking Bad with you.
I know. It's something about Todd, I think that's for the best. That Todd, just leave it open. Todd doesn't need to say anything else. He's done enough.
Has he not done enough? Yeah. You know, he tried real hard. Yeah. He tried real hard.
You can't say he didn't try.
He didn't try. There was a certain logic to him. But the unpacking of Todd was so interesting, because he just seemed like, yeah, he's just like this sweet kid. And then you start getting more and you're like, oh, he's kind of a serial killer, almost a serial killer. Yeah. Oh, he's almost a white, he's kind of a white supremacist. Oh my God, what the fuck? And then by the end of it, it's just like, he's kind of a monster.
Yeah, murderous Opie.
Yeah. I think Opie became murderous Opie. There's no way that kid did not grow up to be a murderer.
Yeah, yeah.
His father was a cop.
That's true.
He knew how the law worked. There was no mom God. In the picture.
Wow. There's the movie right there.
If we're talking about reboots.
Yeah, let's do that reboot.
It's the Andy Griffith movie. How much press are you doing right now?
I just had 2 days of press junket. And then I think this is it till the premiere. So it's not too bad.
When's the premiere?
22nd. So nice. Pretty soon, yeah.
Do you like this part of it, or is this the part where it's like, oh, I don't want to have to talk about this stuff. I just want to make things.
This is okay. Yeah. Like, I don't mind this. I met you when we hung out, yeah. So I was excited about this. The on-camera stuff is just a little unnatural. You know, it's funny, you know. When you start out, you never even consider this side of it. You know. It's like it. You really have to shift into a different sort of part of your brain, where you're almost turning into a salesman of sorts, you
right.
know. But luckily, it's a movie that I really like,
right?
And, so that's much easier than promoting a movie
it's
you
funny
don't
that you
like.
Say that, because like most people become performers because they don't want to be salesmen.
Yeah, like, exactly.
You're like, no, I did this because I don't want to have to go sell stuff and be like, hey, what's it going to take to get you into this thing?
Yeah.
You know, like, you don't want to do that. And then yet.
A fine print there.
Yeah, exactly. And yet, so much of what you have to do surrounding this stuff is exactly that. Or yeah. Are they pressuring you to promote? Are they like, hey, can you live? Can you tweet? Can you, like, do any of that
stuff? I haven't had any pressure to promote via social media. I think because they probably just know that that's not going to happen. I haven't been forced into it yet, which is good.
But you managed to... I find when I talk to people, and they seem generally happy, and then I go, are you on social media? And they go, no. And I go, oh, that's really an interesting correlation.
I'll never forget. I was in the Austin airport one time. I forget what platform he was working with. He came up because he was a fan of Friday Night Lights, and he was some sort of a publicist or something, and he was like, so where can I find you? You know, Facebook, Twitter, whatever. I was like, no, I'm not on there. And he looked at me with such confusion and shock, and like he was like scared for me and just like didn't understand it.
It's the equivalent of saying to someone like maybe 30 years ago, like, oh, I don't have a telephone. Yeah, I don't. Yeah. Like, what? How do you not? Well, I just don't, you know, yeah, I just don't want to. I don't need to be connected in that way. So when you're going on the internet, what is it that you're doing? Like, what are you engaging with?
I read the, you know, I have the news apps, that sort of thing. But everyone else that has Instagram or Facebook or whatever, they just know to send me the pictures that I would like to see. So I'm not even missing out, you know? Like, they know the drill by this point. And yeah, I'm not going to lie. I occasionally look at Fuck Jerry and that sort of thing.
Sure, of course. Know, yeah.
Chuckle. But yeah, I just also realized way back when I first signed up for Facebook, there was just this moment where I came to after wasting an hour and a half, and it was just like, what what happened? Where did I go?
Yep.
And just realized I don't want to spend my time being, you know, sort of in this other world that's not in front of me, you know. It's just so easy to get lost in it.
And I feel like a lot of... Katie, can you ask him to stop scraping paint off the door? I feel like a lot of the characters you play, too, have an immense amount of focus.
Yeah.
Todd had a lot of focus. This guy in Game Night has a lot of focus. I've seen you play a lot of characters that are very focused.
Yeah.
Do you feel like a focused human being?
I can be when I want to be or need to be. I mean, part of what I love most about acting is the preparation process, because, you know, it's just still amazes me. Like, you wake up and find yourself, you know, for Black Mirror, obsessing about William Shatner.
God damn it, that was so good.
Thank you.
He was very focused.
He was extremely focused. Yeah. So it's just, I enjoy getting lost into wherever the part takes me and all that.
I mean, I'm positive you've talked about this before, but how much Shatner preparation did you do for USS Callister?
I fought it at first, and then I got there a couple weeks before we started shooting, and we did a script read, and it became obvious that there was no way to not pay some tribute to Shatner.
Yeah.
And so the few weeks leading up to filming, yeah, it was just every night watching. I mean, I watched pretty much everything in 2 weeks, and found that I really enjoyed it, which I was surprised by, because I have some kind of aversion, or had some aversion, to sci-fi.
Oh, you did?
I didn't grow up with it, and I, you know, I enjoyed Star Wars and, you know, the big ones, but never really got into it. I watched Westerns as a kid, so it was just not something I sought out, but... I have to say, they got something there with that. There's Star Trek.
Well, I mean, some of them are... Well, I think Star Trek is really like a sort of like a military show in a lot of ways. But there are Westerns. Like, if you watch Firefly, that's a sci-fi space Western.
Yeah,
if you ever
saw
Firefly. You know, there's only like 6-7 episodes of it, too. You could burn through that pretty fast.
Yeah.
But you're Texas, right? You grew up in Texas?
Grew up in Texas, yeah.
What part?
Not far from... well, I'm thinking of the show now, Waco.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, my uncle lived like less than a mile away from that complex.
Oh, so, really?
Yeah. It's this little town like 20 miles east of Waco called Mart is where I grew up.
Oh, wow.
Like 2,000 people, one stoplight.
So I'm guessing most people do not leave and go off and pursue acting careers.
Not too many, no. Yeah. No, I mean, it was kind of, looking back, the perfect way to grow up, because I started coming out to L.A. when I was probably 11 or 12, so it was nice to have the extremes of this tiny small town where I went home and, you know, I still had my chores I had to do, and then the next day I would find myself in L.A., meeting people that I would never have met, you know, in this tiny little town. So there was something really nice about it. And I still kind of do the same thing I've always done. You know, I don't really live full time here or there. I'm kind of always back and forth, which
is nice.
a good setup. Yeah.
So you didn't like flip off the fan. Fuck you guys. I'm getting out of it. I need more than one streetlight.
No. Yeah, I have much more appreciation now than I did then. And I always, it was such a small town that, you know, I had 40 kids in my graduating class. So there was something something really nice about the fact that there weren't enough kids to really be assholes to one another. Like you couldn't be too clicky because you wouldn't have any friends.
You're super accountable to everyone.
Yeah. Oh yeah. You get into any trouble, everyone knows about it.
But then it's also that cause I'm from the South too, but not like that. I mean, I'm from Memphis, so it was a larger city, but there was still that sort of small town mentality of, who do you think you are? You know,
oh,
like you
totally.
Can't get away with anything because people will clamor out of their way to make sure you remember. Exactly. Like, yeah, you're not fucking better than anyone, so just shut the fuck up.
Exactly. Yeah, every time I would come back from LA, I would come out here to audition and I would get back to school and all my friends would ask, so what movies did you do? Like, plural. I just auditioned for it. I didn't do anything.
Oh, I did like 9 movies, like 3 days. Yeah, you just, whatever. Just between the airport and the hotel, shot a couple. Yeah. That's really sweet, though. I mean, I think it's always important for people to have, because I'm sure it's so easy to just get lost in whatever it is out here. So to have a home base and to feel kind of grounded and to feel like, you have a safe space to go to.
Yeah, definitely. And Austin is kind of, which is where I live now, it's kind of the perfect in-between of the two. You know, it's a big enough city, but it's also, you can drive 10 minutes and get out of the city, which is nice.
Yeah, Austin has become a very metropolitan city, and I've been going there for years and watched it happen over the last 10 years. Of like, oh yeah, you can't really afford to live like in downtown Austin anymore. It's gotten really nuts.
It has, yeah.
But it's such a great, any town that's sort of built around a state school just has a great vibe, because there's, there's a lot of creative energy and there's a lot of people doing new stuff and especially because Austin is so antithetical to the rest of Texas, I think. I mean, at least the center of it is. I know you don't have to go out far out the loop to feel the rest of Texas, but Austin itself does not feel quite like the rest of Texas.
No, which is okay. And it's this kind of catch-all for all of the freaks in the best way possible.
Yeah,
It's, I remember when I first moved to Austin for Friday Night Lights and went to ACL. It was the first time I had seen a full blown hippie, and I didn't know they still existed.
Oh yeah,
and I was so excited.
You
know, 18 years old, and it's just there's a lot happening there, and
they
really
keep it weird.
Good people, and great music. I love it.
Do you think you're gonna raise your kids in primarily in Texas, or are you going to keep them away from LA as much as possible, or both?
I mean, there's no way to completely keep them away from LA. I mean, luckily we've got a little bit of time to figure that out, but we're thinking Austin, yeah. So I'm not sure yet, but that's what we're thinking.
Do you have a good, everyone has a different answer, but barbecue, people like Franklin, that fucking barbecue truck.
Yeah.
But is there, like, what is the definitive Austin barbecue experience?
I think for the full, even beyond full Austin experience, the full Texas barbecue experience is the big Salt Lick.
Salt Lick, yeah.
Yeah, which is just like an amusement park of barbecue. It's enormous. It's great, yeah. But there's a ton there, and actually, surprisingly enough, some of the best sushi I've ever had in my life in Austin. This place, Uchi, and they have a place called Uchiko. But it's, I mean, like last meal worthy. It's ridiculously good. So next time, go to Uchi.
It is funny that sometimes people in LA go, I'm not going to get sushi in Texas. There's not even close to... And I go,
yeah, don't. Then.
None of the sushi in LA comes from the ocean right here. You know that, right? It's blown in.
Yeah.
Like, none of it comes from here. Yeah. I wouldn't eat anything that came out of this fucking water here.
No.
Uchi, okay. Those are good recommendations, because Austin is becoming, again, it's I think I must have performed in like five festivals one year that had like comedy stages, and there is a festival almost every weekend. I mean, do you see, is the Austin bubble going to burst at any point, or do you still feel like Austin is in a rapid growth phase?
At some point it's gotta level out, I would hope. But yeah, I mean, right now you look downtown and there are probably 8 or 9 cranes up at once. But even with the growth, there are still the areas that have the same sort of charm as when I first moved out there.
Yeah.
So you can still find it. But I hope eventually it levels out.
I just want to tell a slightly embarrassing story, which okay. I apologize for. Not for me. I mean, it might be embarrassing to you, but it was an amazing moment. Had you ever been to I met you at SNL.
No. Yeah, it was my first time.
It was my first time, too, of like actually going and watching a show. And it was insane. Did it exceed your expectations?
Yeah. Yeah, I want to go back.
So when we were there, they let us kind of walk out onto the floor and watch the monologue, which is, it's just crazy to see it from that vantage point. Mm-hmm. That place is a living museum, that studio. And Steven Spielberg was there, and we were like, oh my God, Steven Spielberg's here. And you're like, hi, Steven. And you guys fucking knew each other, of course, because you've worked together before. But what little Texas Jesse, you're like, someday I'm going to be on the set of SNL and I'm going to go say hi to Spielberg and he's going to know who I am because we're going to have worked together. Do you ever think of things in those terms of like, did I die at some point? Is my life is so surreal? Or do you just not think of things in that manner?
None of it makes any sense and hasn't for a while. But just keep going. No, the only way I know how to put it is, I started acting when I was pretty young, and when I got Friday Night Lights, it was the first time where it actually clicked that, hey, I might actually be able to do this as a career. And I had so much fun on that show, and I just didn't have a timeline for it. All I cared about was just working enough to support myself, and whatever happens, happens. Obviously, I then would have loved to have worked with the directors I've had the chance to work with, but I never imagined it would happen this soon. You know, it's beyond surreal, and I feel very, very lucky, and I still don't quite know how it happened, but apparently it did.
But your characters have so much presence. There's so much presence in those characters, and obviously that comes from you. But what is it? I mean, what are you sort of putting into these characters? Are you drawing on stuff that's in you, or are you approximating like what you think they want? Like, how are you approaching these different guys?
I think both. You can only really use what you have. But like I was saying earlier, even in school, I feel like part of the reason why I've been fortunate enough to get on some of these great shows and movies is I feel like I'm my best when I'm my most interested in what I'm doing. I mean, I remember, auditioning for some like Disney shows when I was younger, and like this casting director looked at me sort of similar to how that guy in the airport looked at me after I finished the scene, with just like shock and confusion. It's like, we're gonna need some more energy here. Like, what are you doing? The same with commercials. Like, I'll never forget my last commercial audition when I called my agent and said, that's it, no more.
Can't do this anymore.
It was for corn dogs, and we were supposed to, microwavable corn dogs, and we were supposed to be watching the corn dog in the microwave and talking to it like a dog, like, good boy, that's it, roll over, good boy. Roll over. And I walked out and never auditioned for another one again.
And you went and got corn dogs.
Yeah.
Because corn dogs are good.
They are great.
The commercial audition process is a very specific... That takes a specific muscle. Because you have to be able to sort of push the shame aside that you're feeling. Because yeah. That is just like ultra salesman mode.
You must have done it, right?
I had the same exact experience with commercial auditions, and where at a certain point I called and I was like, I can't do these anymore because I don't have the constitution for them. And I feel sorry and snobby for saying, and I was not at a point where I could afford to do that.
I wasn't either.
But I just sort of felt like there's something about this that does not feel good to my soul. And I know that there are people who are better at it.
Exactly.
And I know that there are people who can walk in and talk to a corn dog in a microwave exactly the way it should be talked to. And I have this sort of, you know, this sort of comic cynicism where I'm more inclined to make fun of how dumb that is. And that's very hard to put, and it makes me not, you know, I also have difficulty getting excited about things that I don't like. And I'm super excited about stuff I do, but yeah, it was, the audition for me where I had that was... They're like, okay, so you're in your bedroom, and there's this superhero poster on the wall, and then all of a sudden, he just peels himself out of the poster and just walks across the room, and then you got to react to that. Go. And I'm like, I would shit blood. What are you talking? Like, the reality of that, like, I didn't know how to be like, whoa, oh, whoa. Like, I didn't know how to do, like, the because what just, they want in commercial auditions is, whoa.
And
I
just run, like, head first into the wall. Like, that's what I would have done.
You just slash your own throat. Nothing is real. You know, like, I'm in the Matrix. Yeah. But the process. And also, it's very humbling when you walk into a room and see 30 dudes who look just like you.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, okay, I'm not special. I don't have anything extra to... And I'm feeling bad about not getting jobs I didn't want to get in the first place.
Yeah.
So I completely understand. I completely understand where you're coming from. But what was it? Did you sort of pick and choose theatrical auditions, or did you really just kind of go up for everything and just cross your fingers that you'd get good stuff?
No, I auditioned for pretty much everything for a long time, and you know, after Friday Night Lights, it was sort of a shock to. All of a sudden find myself back in the real world, because that show was just an anomaly, especially for a network show, the amount of freedom that they gave us, how much fun it was, aside from season two when the network tried to sort of amp up the drama.
Sure.
to put it mildly. But I think, like I was saying, I there was a little bit of luck involved, because... You know, my best auditions were the ones that I was excited about, because you know, it didn't feel like work to get excited about it.
Yeah.
When I auditioned for Breaking Bad, it had been months and months since I had gone on an audition that I really cared about, and the scene, I hadn't even seen the show, but the scene was so interesting. And it was a dummy scene, like something they wrote just for the audition. And I didn't even care. I was just like, thank God. After the audition, it was fun. And then got the call that I got it and was on a plane. The character's name was Paul at the time, or in the audition. And so I was on the plane reading the script looking for Paul. And no one told me, but I eventually figured out, oh, I guess I'm Todd.
Well, that show in particular was so good at exploring the depth of characters and also playing with the notion of whatever you think you can judge about what this character looks like is not at all who they are. And that was so much his... Because, you know, his soul was really creepy. They could have just cast a creepy-looking dude and then, like, been really on the nose about it. But they cast, like, you with this really kind of sweet, all-American face, and then... And again, as you're peeling back the layers, like, this is a heavily damaged individual. And you don't know, you know, just like with the fucking ringtone of Lydia's ringtone. Like, all of those layers, when you started unpacking Todd, He's a fascinatingly complex character.
Yeah.
What do you think was his deal? What was his goal? Like, what did he ultimately want?
To be somebody.
He wanted to be somebody.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, and I've thought about, you know, how, and it's interesting, the first half of the season that I came in on, I forget if it was five or six, I mean, I was totally in the dark because I was just a recurring character, and so I was getting the scripts a few days in advance, and I got there and, you know, marathoned the entire show and was meeting Bryan Cranston and Aaron Paul, like, in the thick of watching it. And other than the audition scene, which was a military setting, and the first episode, I had no idea who this guy was, none whatsoever. And I would corner all of the writers and try and pump them for information, and they wouldn't give me anything, but they looked at me as if I were Todd. So it was a really, the first half of the season, I mainly felt like, I don't know what I'm doing. Like, Vince Gilligan gave me a few sentences of direction before I had to shoot the kid on the dirt bike. But that was it. And then when Uncle Jack came in, it started to become a little bit more fun. Just there was just more to kind of hold on to. But I always kind of envisioned Todd's childhood a little bit like, you remember the ATM episode with the little kid?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think Todd didn't just happen, you know.
He was like a product of like a weird meth family,
had to have been.
Yeah, that single he was just mother, a tightly wound, protective.
Yeah, there was a lot going on there.
Well, because he, you know, again, when he has a scene where he shoots a kid on the bike, there are a million ways that I think other people might have played that of like, to go crazy or to act crazy, but he's just so calm and matter of fact about, well, this is just what has to be done, even if it's the most horrific thing.
Yeah. Did I ever tell you those two sentences that Vince Gilligan told me? So I go up to him, I ask him, how do I do this? And he, in his way, said, you know, when you're driving and you see a raccoon in the road, and if you swerve to the right, you go into the ditch. If you swerve to the left, you hit the car. So, what do you do? So, okay, I'll go with that.
Well, Todd just runs over.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because that's what he feels like needs to be done.
So it was very, you know, there wasn't much, but it did kind of inform the way I played it from then on.
Yeah. And with Fargo, was that, I mean, you must have known that that was going to be like really a great, that was going to be a juicy, were you a fan of the show?
It's so sad to say, but all these shows I came into so late, right before I started.
I think it actually might be sort of a good luck thing. Where it's like, oh my God, I haven't watched this. This might be really good. I might need to get into this.
All of those shows were shows that all my friends had been telling me I had to watch. That one included. And it was something that I sort of had the same feelings as I did when I heard they were making Friday Night Lights into a show. I thought, that seems like a terrible idea. And then I watched the first season and thought it was great, thought they achieved the impossible by really capturing the Coen brothers' world. And I just thought that it would be a lot, just the way they shot it seemed really exciting as an actor, because they really kind of give you some space. And it's rare to, especially for television, to find shows where they really let it play sometimes in one shot, mm-hmm. you know, So then it almost feels like a play or something, and you really get to kind of experiment and have fun without doing a ton of different setups. And sometimes, you know, they did, but it was a lot of fun and just great writing.
Do you I find it can be difficult sometimes, particularly with acting, because I think people think, especially when they first start out, like, if they don't feel like they're doing something, I mean, I think that's where a lot of, like, big obnoxious choices come from is because people think, like, well, I gotta do something. If I don't feel like I'm doing something, then I'm not really acting. And, you know, I find that some of the best people just seem effortless. It's like they're not trying to do anything. Mm. They're just sort of being.
Everyone in life is just trying to keep it together. You know? I mean, yeah. I don't know. People are way more complex than stereotypes, you know.
Right. Well, then how do you ever have, like, when you first read something, do you have, like, an initial, like, oh, if I were going to play the sort of obvious take on this, it'd be this. So I'm going to scoot that out of the way and kind of figure out, like, how to really get into this.
I don't know. It just seems, I guess, instinctual, and I try not to judge it or think about what I'm going to do until I've really sat with it long enough. But it's kind of different every time, and you just keep at it until you find your way into it that seems to be most exciting for you to play, you know. But no, I don't think I really think of the obvious choice. I don't know.
Well, I get the sense you and your fiance are both sort of in the same realm where it's like you just seem to pick and choose really awesome things that you're excited about. Like, I don't ever get the sense when I watch either one of you, like, I think they just took that because it was a job, you know. It always seems like, oh, they think they really cared about this thing that they were doing. And that can be a very scary and difficult thing to do in a business where you cannot predict what's coming down the pipeline. So do you agree with that? Would you be willing, like, if you weren't excited about something for like a year or two, would you go, well, I'm just not going to work if I'm not excited about anything?
Oh, until I have to. I'm not saying never, you know. But as long as I can, as long as I can't believe that in the last however many years I'm primarily working on projects that I'm really excited about. I mean, and I think part of it is because I've been at it for such a long time and auditioned for so many things that I didn't like that, yeah, if I have the chance to do something I want to do, that's what I'm going to do.
Right.
And that being said, you know, going back to game night, it's like I don't shut anything off and say, no, I'm not going to do that. It all just depends on the project and the people involved. And game night was something that I didn't expect, and then read it and just immediately knew I wanted to do it. So, yeah.
Do you ever have a thing in the back of your head where you go like, if it's not fun anymore, I'll just go back and be a farmer. Like, I'll just go back to Texas. And I mean, I have skill sets from, you know, growing up in the town. Again, I could, you know, I always know I could just go do that if I decided to run away from everything else.
I have had that thought before, probably. I mean, I have seriously had that thought before, but I know there's something that I love too much about it. Like I was saying earlier, just it's difficult to get bored with it because it's always something new, and you never stop learning. So, and you know, it's exciting as I go on, the prospect of developing and, you know, putting a team together and getting on that side of things. So I don't know. I don't need to do it all the time, but it does fulfill something that I really enjoy.
I mean, I am constantly fascinated by the idea that you know, people who love acting, it's one of the things you actually, when you really break it down, you spend a very small amount of time actually doing it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of waiting. There's a lot of traveling. There's a lot of sitting in trailers. But the actual, like, all right, and action. Like, yeah. That's does not constitute a lot of your day.
Yeah.
So it is interesting to pursue this thing that you maybe actually, if you put it all together, really do for, like, 15 minutes, you know, in a day, maybe, when the cameras are actually rolling.
No, you're right. There is a lot of sitting around and waiting. And, you know, that being said, that was what was so unusual and wonderful about Friday Night Lights is there was, we moved so quickly and there were no rehearsals. You know, we would do a 3-page scene in 30 minutes.
Oh my God.
And leave and not feel like we didn't get it, you know? So, sometimes it's not as tedious, but most times it definitely is.
Do you miss the regularity of a series, or do you sort of like not being tied to something?
I enjoy both. If you're really passionate about it, it's great. And that one I was. I like both. But it is, you do really, when you're on a series or even a mini series like Fargo and you're spending every day with the crew, it is different than a movie because you obviously you're spending more time with each other and, you develop maybe a deeper connection with the people you're working with.
So you can walk around and go, don't ever look me in the eye. I'm the star of this. You're not supposed to make sure your head is lower than mine.
Exactly.
I eat first, you know, that kind of stuff.
Uh-huh. You got it.
Yep. You're such a nice guy. I can't ever imagine like the Jesse Plemons meltdown. Like, I don't think we're ever going to see that pop up on Facebook or circulate on YouTube.
God, my grandma would be the first to know. She's, she's the oldest or the longest subscriber to National Enquirer.
What?
In Texas. Yeah. And so she's always so nervous. She's like, please don't show up. Don't show up.
That's still a thing?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
She has a subscription. She's, longest standing.
That is quite an accomplishment. Don't you feel like you're going to have to... I feel like at a certain point, you're just going to have to call the Enquirer people and be like, can you just throw me in one?
just
as a joke, for her. Come on, just for her. I'm the father of the Bat Child. How about that? You know, the Bat Child who escaped. Just say that I'm him or something.
Yeah, that would be good, actually.
Well, I always, even though some of the characters that you play are, I mean, they're, you know, their motivations are not great always, maybe a little selfish in some cases. But there's always a humanity, like even with the Callister episode of Black Mirror, like you really empathized at a certain point. Obviously, you're like, okay, this guy's way off the deep end as it starts to get creepier and creepier. But there is a real, you know, it's just not playing a character like this character is bad. It's like, you know, finding the humanity in these guys and making people understand, like, you know, people are complex. No one's really all bad or all good.
Mm-hmm. Well, that episode I found really interesting because, like a lot of Black Mirror episodes, you don't really know how to feel at the end. But with him, I don't know. There's a part of me that thinks, well, so what changes in the office? You know, I mean, well, Daly's still hooked up to the game, but
right.
One of the crew members came up to me at the wrap party when we finished and said, I was bullied in school and this means so much to me. So there is that too.
Sure.
You know, and like I was saying, the people don't just pop up and all of a sudden they're sinister and evil. You know, it's a... progression. So yeah, I went through different phases with Daly where I thought, yeah, he has it coming to him. But then by the end, I don't know how to feel about it.
Yeah, I mean, he is basically in an eternal prison.
Yeah. He needed to talk to someone. He needed a shrink.
Well, he obviously was taken advantage of and pushed around and wasn't really able to kind of speak up for himself in life and maybe held down for a lot of reasons. And, you know,
just angry, just like on the verge of exploding with anger, which is something that I think a lot of people deal with and try and keep at bay.
Well, also, and then sort of the ethical questions like, well, you know, these characters he created, they're not really real. He's created this sort of virtual world. However, I never thought of it that way, but you're right. That is Black Mirror. You don't know how you're supposed to feel at the end of each episode. You're like, yay. Or no, I don't know. That is especially in that episode, because he should get some punishment.
Yeah.
But maybe not that punishment.
Yeah.
Like that's a pretty permanent. That's pretty permanent.
Yeah. I don't know.
I think we need to see. I would hope that Black Mirror at some point would go, okay, we're going to go back and like show some codas to some of these stories and find out, like, is that really it or what happens to him? I mean, it's the fact that it is a connected universe, but
yeah,
they
that
don't.
Last episode.
But they don't always, they don't really acknowledge always that there's some sort of a thing. It's just like, well, this is just kind of a, you know, I still watch Twilight Zone pretty almost every night when I'm trying to fall asleep. I'll put a Twilight Zone on. And there's nothing that's connected about any of those stories, really. They're just, these are sort of individuals. But Black Mirror, Charlie has definitely suggested, well, this is all a part of a thing without saying that.
Mm-hmm. Especially with the Black Museum.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Especially with Black Museum. Yeah. So, I don't know. At a certain point, I wonder if he's going to have to say, like, all right, this is what this is, and these are all connected, and here are all these characters, and this is what happened. Because at the end of it, it's not too far off. There are so many stories that are so close to like, yeah, we're almost kind of there.
Yeah.
We're kind of there right now.
The nosedive episode from season 2 or 3 with Bryce Dallas Howard.
Oh, yes. Yeah, the economy of likes and the...
I had to pause and take a break when I was watching that one because it felt... Way too near.
Oh, 100%. Because we, like, if part of what makes us human is this sort of, and I think what drives people a lot of the time is a sort of need for significance in some way, to connect with other people and to be significant in some way, which biologically makes sense because, you know, if you had an imperative to pass your genes down, you would need to feel significant so that your genes would prevail and your DNA would... You know, and so if that's part of the thing that makes us keep going, it's also the thing that can be crippling to us because it is a weakness to need to be significant in some way. It is a huge weakness.
Yes, but it's also just... Human nature, you know? I feel like maybe not with everyone, but a large part of you know, people across the world, I feel like I have enormous dreams and aspirations. And if they didn't, you know, there would be a lot less, you know, of everything. So...
Yeah, I know, but the likes and the... The shares and the... I think it's...
Well, that's different.
It's activating a certain part of our brain that feels like it's really accomplishing something, but it can ultimately be kind of an empty pursuit. And that is one of the reasons... Yeah, that was so great about that episode of like, yeah, We're just obsessing over the wrong shit.
Oh, I sort of forgot that's what we were talking about when I said that. But yes, just trying to grasp onto something positive. But yeah, I do not understand that whatsoever. Especially with kids, like just being conditioned and trained and wired to care so much about likes. It's no one ever talks about this. I'm joking.
What are you going to tell? I mean, it's, you know, I think my wife and I are probably a year away from having a kid, and you're months away at this point.
Yeah.
So are you even trying to take any of that on right now? Or are you like, well, I guess I'll just have to figure it out as it comes up? Because obviously kids don't want to be left out. So if their friends are like, well, they're doing all this stuff, like how do you balance it out?
Well, and you also have to hold yourself more accountable too, because they... You know, my house in Austin, I live with one of my best friends and her 5-year-old. So I've had some practice, you know, at least being the uncle, just watching her develop. And she's such a great kid. But they are, you know, reflections of you. And so if you're on the phone all day, why is it surprising that they're drawn to it, you know?
Yeah.
But it is something that I obviously have thought about, but yeah, you figure it out as you go along, I guess.
I mean, I know that people have always done that, and they're, you know, that under no matter what circumstances, humans do, you know, thrive, and people do figure it out. But it does seem like now more than ever of, you know, of course, in the old days, it's like, hey, don't go into the woods. There's wolves, you know. And then now, but it's just like now there's all these psychological wolves. Like, how do you protect, but then let them take risks and grow, but not shelter them too much, but then shelter them just enough. And I honestly don't know.
Kids?
Not yet. We've been married about a year and a half, so we're not too far away from making a human, I think.
Yeah, that is the scariest part. Well, I mean, it's all scary.
Yeah, of course. Are you a stressy person? Do you stress a lot, or are you pretty good at being calm?
I've got my moments where I can stress out, but I'm slowly getting better, maybe.
Good.
I feel like I am.
I just don't want to be the type of parent where I'm like, why are you sniffling? What's wrong?
No.
Oh, my God, we have to get you to a doctor. Like, because then that just fucks a kid up.
Yeah.
Because then they're never... But then how do you know what's the balance between being involved and concerned and then just not being a helicopter parent where you're like, over here, Joshua, over here, come here, Joshua, Joshua, you know. I try to take mental notes when I see other parents in restaurants.
Don't do that.
It's usually don't do that. But once you're there, you just don't know. Like, maybe it's not so easy to not do that.
Yeah, I just know. Kids need to get dirty.
Yeah, they absolutely. Absolutely. You just get a farm.
Yeah.
Let them run around the farm.
Yeah.
Are you preparing? Are you reading any books? Are you talking to friends? I feel like it's dangerous to talk to friends because they never have, like, the friends are always like, oh my God, and then they got this crazy ear infection, and then this happened, and then don't let them do this. Like, does anyone ever go like, yeah, it's going to be fine?
Yeah. My friend in Austin, you know, it's been really encouraging to watch her become a mother and to see how kind of, it's obviously not easy, but there's a lot of it that seems to be common sense, you know, and like I was saying, you know, they are a reflection of yourself, so it seems like it's inevitable to do some self-reflection there, and it's changed her as a person, you know, for the better. We definitely have friends that we trust that we can call and that aren't just judging everything that we're doing. Yeah.
Well, as we're sort of winding this down, when does game night come out? Do you know?
23rd.
Yeah. And John Daly was one of the directors on that, right?
Yeah.
From Freaks and Geeks.
Yeah.
He's great.
I know. I love that guy.
Oh, my God. Yeah. The cast is amazing. It's you and Jason Bateman and Rachel McAdams and Kyle Chandler.
Kyle Chandler, yeah.
Which you did, you had a little bit of interaction with him in the movie.
In the movie, yeah. He looked at me a few times, basically.
Was that just a complete coincidence that you guys both ended up?
Yeah, that was the director's idea. And yeah, when I heard about the choice for him to play Bateman's brother, I was like, that's perfect.
Yeah.
It really works.
Yeah. So that comes out February 23rd. And then is there anything else you want to plug or promote or anything?
There's one I wish I could, but I can't yet. Sorry.
God damn it.
I don't think so. No.
Then maybe as we're wrapping this out, would you be willing to just give that one that you weren't able to do at the time, just one really excited read about a corn dog in a microwave?
I knew you were going to say that.
Yeah, I mean, the people want it. And who knows? Maybe this could really wake up Big Corn Dog to throw piles of money at you.
Okay. Here we go, boy. Good boy. Roll over. Roll over, boy. Oh, oh. Good boy.
Cut. You got the job. Damn. You got the job.
Damn.
Corn dogs for life.
Good.
Enjoy your corn dog, everyone.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jesse.
Thanks, man.
ID10T scanning complete. Enjoy your burrito.
This episode is brought to you by the effortlessly scrumptious bite of Skinny Pop Popcorn. Imagine this. Perfectly popped, endlessly delicious kernels, a symphony of just three simple ingredients. Popcorn, sunflower oil, and a sprinkle of salt. No compromise, just pure snacking freedom. And hey, if you're up for a twist, dive into flavors like zesty white cheddar to sweet and salty kettle. Every bite's a delight, light and oh so tasty. Shop Skinny Pop now.